ओम नमो नमः श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे भगवद गीता एज इट इज चैप्टर 2 कंटेंट्स ऑफ द गीता समराइज्ड Text 37, page 121. Sanskrit together. Ato va prapshasi svargam, jitva va bokshase mahim, tasmat utishta kaunteya, yudhaya krita nishchaya. Translation. O son of Kunti, either you will be killed on the battlefield and attain the heavenly planets, or you will conquer and enjoy heavenly kingdom. Therefore, get up with determination and fight. Text 38. Sukuduke same kritva labha labho jaya jayo tato yudhaya yujasva naivam papam avapshasi. Translation together. Do thou fight for the sake of fighting, without considering happiness or distress, loss or gain, victory or defeat, and by so doing, you shall never incur sin. Text 39 together. Esha te bihita sankhe buddhir yoge trimam shunu buddhya yukto yaya partha karma bandham prahashasi. Translation. Thus far I have described this knowledge to you through analytical study. Now listen as I explain it in terms of working without fruitive results. O son of Pritha, when you act in such knowledge, you can free yourself from the bondage of works. Text 40. Neha bikramana shosti pratyavayo navijate svapamapayasya dharmasya trayate mahato bhayat. Translation. In this endeavor, there is no loss or diminution, and a little advancement on this path can protect one from the most dangerous type of fear. Text 41. Vyavasayatmika buddhir ekeha kurunandana bahushaka hinantascha buddhayo vyavasayinam. Translation. Those who are on this path are resolute in purpose, and their aim is one. O beloved child of the Kurus, the intelligence of those who are irresolute is many-branched. Text 42 through 43. Yam imam pushpitam vacham pravadantya vipaschitaha vedavararita partha nanyad asti tivadinaha kamatmanas vargapara janma karma phala pradam kriya vishesha bahulam bhogaishvarya gatim prati. Translation. Men of small knowledge are very much attached to the flowery words of the Vedas, which recommend various fruitive activities for elevation to heavenly planets, resultant good birth, power, and so forth. Being desirous of sense gratification and opulent life, they say that there is nothing more than this. Text 44. Bhogaishvarya prasaktanam taya parita cetasam vyavasayatmika buddhir samadho nividhiyate. Translation. In the minds of those who are too attached to sense enjoyment and material opulence, and who are bewildered by such things, the resolute determination for devotional service to the Supreme Lord does not take place. Text 45. Trigunya vishaya veda nishtraigunyo bhavarjuna nidvanvo nitya satvasto niyoga kshema atmavan. Translation. The Vedas deal mainly with the subject of the three modes of material nature, O Arjuna, become transcendental to these three modes, be free from all dualities and from all anxieties for gain and safety, and be established in the Self. Text 46. Yavan arta udapane sarvatak samputodake tavan sarveshu vedeshu brahmanasya vijanata. Translation. All purpose is served by a small well can at once be served by a great reservoir of water. Similarly, all the purposes of the Vedas can be served to one who knows the purpose behind them. And finally, text 47. Karmanyevadikaraste ma paleshu kadachana ma karma palabhe turpur matse sangaste karmani. Translation. You have a right to perform your prescribed duty, but you are not entitled to the fruits of action. Never consider yourself the cause of your activities, and never be attached to not doing your duty. Going back, text 37. O son of Kunti, either you will be killed on the battlefield and attain the heavenly planets, or you will conquer and enjoy the earthly kingdom. Therefore, get up with determination and fight.
Make a little more volume, please.
Purport. By His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Even though there was no certainty of victory for Arjuna's side, he still had to fight, for even being killed there, he could be elevated into the heavenly planets. We have Dr. Richard can read the next text, translation 38. Do you have your glasses?
Do thou, for the sake of fighting, without considering happiness or distress, loss or gain, victory or defeat, and by so doing, you shall never incur sin. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Srila Prabhupada. Lord Krishna knows direct. Lord Krishna now directly says that Arjuna should fight for the sake of fighting, because he desires the battle. There is no consideration of happiness or distress, profit or gain, victory or defeat, in the activities of Krishna consciousness. That everything should be performed for the sake of Krishna is transcendental consciousness. So there is no reaction to material activities. He who acts for his own sense gratification, either in goodness or in passion, is subject to the reaction, good or bad. But he who has completely surrendered himself in the activities of Krishna consciousness is no longer obliged to anyone, nor is he a debtor to anyone, as one is in the ordinary course of activities. It is said, Darsi
Devarshi Bhutaptan Inam Patinam Akinkaro Nayam Ranija Rajan Sarvatmana Yaksharanam Sharanyam Tato Makundam Parihritya Kartam.
Anyone who has completely surrendered unto Krishna, Mukunda, giving up all other duties, is no longer a debtor, nor is he obliged to anyone, not the demigods, nor the sages, nor the people in general, nor kinsmen, nor humanity, nor forefathers. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.5.41. That is the indirect hint given by Krishna to Arjuna in this verse, and the matter will be more clearly explained in the following verses.
In November of 1977, when Prabhupada was in Vrindavan, Swarup Damodar Prabhu at that time received a telegram from Manipur. His grandfather had expired, and his family was requesting, inviting him to come for the Shraddha ceremony, which is the funeral, more or less, the funeral idea. So he asked Prabhupada's permission to go, to take a leave. He was staying there with Prabhupada. Prabhupada wanted, he was doing scientific preaching, Bhaktivedanta Institute, and plus it was, Prabhupada was very ill, so he wanted senior devotees with him. But still, so Damodar requested if he could go, and Prabhupada quoted this verse, Devarshi bhutapta ninam patinam nakinkaro nayam rani tirajan saratmana yak sharanam sharanyam kuto makundam parihriti kartam, which means that if one is taken to devotional service, he is no longer a debtor. This word rani means a debtor. He has no more debt to who? Deva, the demigods. He doesn't have to worship demigods. He has no debt. It's not that if he fails to worship the demigods, then he has been neglectful. Like some of our friends from India, they are conditioned to worshiping demigods. And when they're told that you just surrender to Krishna, don't worry about the demigods, they're a little fearful. If I give up worshiping these demigods, won't there be some neglect on my part? Or maybe they'll be angry with me? Or maybe I won't get some material benefits? But no, Krishna is saying, no debts. You have no responsibilities. Then Devarshi, Deva Rishi. Rishi means the sages. Generally, everyone, when they're born, they have debts, three types of debts. The first debt is to the devas, demigods, because they're supplying everything. All the elements, all the sunlight, the air, the water, the earth, all the different things. This is all being controlled by the demigods. Without their grace, we wouldn't even be able to have a body or breathe. But one has to perform sacrifices. Earlier on in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains that one should offer sacrifice, deva yajna, to the demigods. That's the first debt. Then Rishi, the sages, they've given us so much knowledge. Just like in the West, of course, they don't recognize the Vedic sages very well, but they recognize their science sages, Newton and Planck and Einstein, and they offer quite a bit of respect to them. They hold them in high esteem, their words are honored, and they study their teachings. So in the Vedic culture, same principle, these sages, especially Vyasadeva, he's the greatest of the sages, or Narad Muni, Devarshi, he's called Devarshi Narada. Of all the demigods, he's the greatest sage amongst the demigods. So, these sages, we have a debt to them. Why a debt? Because they left us all this knowledge. So how do we pay back that debt? We study the scriptures. We study the Vedic literatures that they have given us. Then, Devarshi Bhutapta. So, Bhuta means people in general. Because we're members, for example, of America. So, it may be said that we have a duty. We have responsibility. As a member of the human society, we have to have so many duties. We have to, for example, fight for our country. Or we have to be humanitarian, support the United Nations, or some. It's like one man, he was extremely wealthy, and he wanted to give some huge donation. He had billions of dollars, so he wanted to give a big donation, so he gave it to the United Nations, because he thought that this was the best way he could serve humanity, humankind. But a Krishna conscious person is not a debtor to humanity, or to the even the universe. He doesn't even have any universal responsibilities. Bhutapta apta means relative. Yeah. People in general, kinsmen. So apta means kinsmen. Then devarshi bhutapta nrina. Nrina means mankind. So bhutapta means to people in general or mankind, my people, my group, my country, Ninam, Patrinam, the forefathers. And this applied to Swarup Damodar because he was thinking that I have a responsibility to my great, to my grandfather and to my predecessors, because he was the senior son, senior male in the family. But Prabhupada quoted this verse and said, there's no need. You have no other responsibilities. You're already engaged in devotional service. There's nothing higher than that. There's nothing that is more pressing or urgent than engaging in devotional service to Krishna. We may think, well, devotional service to Krishna, it's only a daily affair. Everything's more or less the same every day. I worship Krishna, I chant, and I do some service. But if I take a few days off to make some offering to the forefathers or the demigods, or if I take even a few hours, but no. If one does that, then he falls down from the platform of pure devotional service. One has to understand how urgent the activities of devotional service are. One may say, but it doesn't make any sense. Krishna, who's God, he has everything. What does he need my few hours of service for? Or my few years or whatever? He's completely self-sufficient. He can take everything he wants by himself. Nor does he need anything. What is it? Why is it so urgent that I have to perform my duty? Arjuna might ask that. What is the difference if this battle doesn't take place? Because Arjuna is proposing that the battle not take place. He's proposing, let them have the kingdom. The Pandavas, we'll go and, at least I might be speaking for himself. He said, at least for myself, I would prefer to live at the cost, I prefer to beg as a Brahmana. We've already been living for the last 13 years in that way. So what's the harm if I live again like that? Why is Krishna's every small desire, why is Krishna's attending to Krishna's service so incumbent upon everyone? Why can't one just take it as in stride, as part of life? Why does it have to be the whole life? These are questions people ask. Why does God have to occupy the soul consciousness? Krishna is demanding. Man mana bhava mad bhakto madhya jima. Always think of me. Become my devotee. Worship me. Offer your homage unto me. Satatam kirtiyantamam. Why this intensity? Because Krishna is the only lovable object. Anyone who thinks that they're going to give any love to anyone else is living in an illusion. There's no possibility of giving love to anyone else. It's like if I tell you, if I'm teaching some neophyte gardeners, and I'm saying, now, you have to understand, the water must go to the root. The root, only the root, nothing but the root. And someone says, why the root? Why not the branch? Why not the leaves? Why not the fruit? or not the flowers. No, the root. Because he knows that's the only way the tree will survive. That's the only way that one can be successful in his gardening attempts. Similarly, as far as life, existence, the only successful existence is when the living entity, Nitai Swarup Krishna Das, he engages as the eternal servant of Krishna. That's his natural constitutional position. Any other function is abnormal. It's as abnormal as it is for a fish to be on the seashore, on the land. You may say it's only 5 feet away from the water. What's the difference? Whether it's in the water or 5 feet on the sand. But it is a great difference. Once he's out of the water, he's finished. Similarly, once we're out of Krishna consciousness, we are finished. We are no longer in our constitutional position. And we will simply flounder and suffer. So that is the reason why. Krishna is not just saying this for some drama or some fanaticism. No, it's a reality. It's like one has to breathe through the nose and the mouth. If he closes the nose and the mouth, well, finished. You may say, well, there's so many other holes in the body, I'll breathe through those holes. No, it doesn't work. You're finished. Similarly, the devotion, the meditation, the love, the offerings, everything has to be directed towards Krishna. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, every moment. And the perfection of that is shown by the gopis of Vrindavan, who, when their eyes blinked for even a moment, they cursed Brahma as a dunce that he created bodies that were so defective that the eyes blinked. Because in the heavenly planet, the eyes don't blink. So they were thinking that here we are on this middle planetary system and Brahma has cheated us by giving us eyes that blink, and for that second we cannot see Krishna. So this Brahma is a fool. Now when we get to that point, that's the desirable point where one cannot but think of Krishna every moment, and not thinking of Krishna or not seeing Krishna or hearing his name is like 12 years or more. You have a question here? Any questions? Okay, continue.
Thus far, I have described this knowledge to you through analytical study. Now listen as I explain it in terms of working without fruitive results. Son of Pritha, when you act in such knowledge, you can free yourself from the bondage of works. Purport. According to the Nirguti, or the Vedic dictionary, Sankhya means that which describes things in detail. And Sankhya refers to that philosophy which describes the real nature of the soul. And yoga involves controlling senses. Arjuna's proposal not to fight was based on sense gratification. Forgetting his prime duty, he wanted to cease fighting because he thought that by not killing his relatives and kinsmen, he would be happier than by enjoying the kingdom after conquering his cousins and brothers, the sons of Dhritarashtra. In both ways, basic principles were for sense gratification. Happiness derived from the conquering them, and happiness derived by seeing kinsmen alive, are both on the basis of personal sense gratification, even at a sacrifice of wisdom and duty. Krishna therefore wanted to explain to Arjuna that by killing the body of his grandfather, he would not be killing the soul proper. And he explained that all individual persons, including the Lord himself, are eternal individuals. They were individuals in the past, they are individuals in the present, and they will continue to remain individuals in the future, because all of us are individual souls eternally.
So everyone follow this point, that Arjuna's considerations were based on his own enjoyment, his own position. Will I get more pleasure? He was even saying, how can we hope to enjoy when all for those, all for whom we wish to enjoy will be what we have to fight? But from the very beginning, he's got the wrong idea. He's thinking that this fight is for his enjoyment, when in actuality, it's for Krishna's enjoyment. And it doesn't matter about whether we derive pleasure or not. Ultimately, we know that the background is that ultimately a devotee knows that he will get pleasure, because he understands philosophically that if I abide by Krishna's will, naturally I'll be satisfied. So in one sense, it seems that he doesn't care about his own happiness because he acts for Krishna. But on the other hand, he certainly does. So he's not a fool. And he's not neglecting his own well-being. He knows that by doing the bidding of Krishna, that he'll be completely satisfied. Does everyone understand this point?
So, how does God or Krishna can enjoy from the suffering of the people or the people who will be dying on the battlefield? What is the enjoyment for Krishna in that?
Of course, no one dies. No one dies. The soul does not die. That's the first teaching of Bhagavad Gita. That's what we are learning, this chapter. That's the point here in the purport, that the soul doesn't die. So there's no question of dying. That's one thing. And the second thing is that how does the very noble-minded king or the judge derive pleasure from sentencing a criminal to some punishment? Does he enjoy the pain inflicted upon the person, or is he more concerned about establishing dharma or the proper behavior for society? Is he more concerned about pleasing God? In other words, why do we have moral principles? Because we consider that morality is good, and good comes from God. And God wants us to act in a moral way. And therefore, we enforce these moral principles for the pleasure of God. Now, we inherently know, or we accept, that God is not a cruel, sadistic person. But actually, he's all good and all merciful. But when he says that something should be done in a particular way, it should be done that way. Otherwise, people will suffer more. Just like if the captain of the ship says, make sure to that there's no water coming in down below. Now, someone may say, I have to go down and check it every hour, just because the captain said. This is such an inconvenience. I was up on the deck, it was a nice sunny day, I was having a good time, and I had to go down every hour. Now, one might say that the captain is imposing some suffering upon the deck, the workers. But actually, he's not. He knows that if they don't check the water, they'll all drown. So that so-called inconvenience is actually his mercy. A little bit of austerity is not a bad thing. Doctor asks for austerity. Parents tell their children, don't play, study now, go to school. They don't want to go to school, but the parents know if they don't go to school now, they'll suffer later more. And they have no education, they can't get a job. So that apparent suffering is actually for their benefit, because the Supreme Father, Supreme Judge, the Supreme King, he knows what's best for everyone. These Duryodhana and company had committed such horrible activities. It was not proper that they should be allowed to rule the world in such bad consciousness against Krishna. Duryodhana tried to kill Krishna when he came as a peace messenger. What a horrible thing. And Duryodhana tried to kill Bhima by poisoning. And they tried to kill the Pandavas, all five of them, by burning down the house. They put them in a house of lacquer. And the idea was to burn it down. And they were planning that. They kidnapped the wife and wanted to strip her naked in the public assembly. These are horrible activities. It's not an ordinary woman. She was not a prostitute. She was Draupadi. Great, exalted personality. Very pious, pure. So when you look at the history of all the activities that they performed, all the sinful deeds, one after the other, Krishna was just fed up. He tolerated as much as he could tolerate. He even went to himself and tried to reason with him, make some compromise. Okay, you usurped the kingdom. Shouldn't have done that. Give them half. All right, if you don't give them half, then give them at least five villages. They'll work under you, but let them have five villages to work under. No, nothing. So many sinful activities. Krishna doesn't want that people should go on like that and be prosperous. He wants to cut them down and take away all their, to show others. This is what happens. If you offend a great personality, you will lose your wealth, your longevity, your fame, and everything. You lose it all. Krishna wanted to show that. This was the right time.
Two questions. First question, I think we've heard before from scriptural sources that all the soldiers in the battle of Kurukshetra on both sides were liberated, or they were, I'm not liberated, I think they were taking the heavenly planets. And my question is, the ones who were doing more of the sinning, like Duryodhana trying to kill Krishna and trying to poison the Pandavas and doing kidnapping Draupadi, these are simple activities that would probably, in today's times, take one to hell, actually. So do those soldiers who are doing the simple things like that, do they also get liberated to the heavenly planets, or do they go to hell?
Krishna is so kind that by his personal presence, being on the battlefield, everyone was benefited. Where Krishna is present, there cannot be anything inauspicious. He purifies, just like when the sun, you know, if there's a big, if you take a big container of stool, and you put it out in the sun, it's not going to contaminate the sun, but rather the sun will purify the stool. So even though they were so sinful, but in the presence of Krishna, they became relieved of their... It's like when Lord Ramachandra, when he killed Ravana, he said, now it's over. Now I have no more enmity with him. He misbehaved, so he had to be punished, but I don't have anything against him. And he actually... by the grace of Lord Ramachandra, he became purified. Those who are killed by the Lord become purified.
And is it that the soldiers all went to heaven, or they got moksha?
Different places, according to their consciousness. Some who were devotees went to Godhead, some who were personal liberation, some who were another way, they got impersonal liberation, or heavenly planets, different things.
My second question, last question. Earlier in the lecture, you were mentioning that it's an illusion to think you can love anyone except Krishna. you can't love, you know, a material platform. So my question is, like Grihastha's, can Grihastha really love his wife? And he says, I love you, and hugs her, and his affection for his children. Is that also love since they're devotees, or is that on the same level as karmis?
Well, we have to see. Just like, if I say, I love you, and I'm thinking that you're the body. So, do I really love the body? Because if I'm loving that body and all the waste products are stored up for a few weeks and brought to me, say, here, this is what you're loving. This is the body you've been loving. Here it is. Would you like to embrace it now? No. So it's not the body that we're loving, but in illusion we may be thinking. So, but are we loving the soul? Well, the soul's not male or female, as we, in our conception. So in other words, what we're loving is our lust. We're not loving, it's lust. We're taking lust to be love. We're mistaking it. So we're in this illusion thinking, oh, I'm in love with this person. But it's based on lust, because you want to enjoy your senses. You want to enjoy your senses and your senses interacting with their body and their mind. So that's what you're considering love. But actually it's lust. Kama dinam katina katida palita durnideshas. Simply lust. Kama. Kama isha. So there's no love. Love is for Krishna, because soul to soul, the individual living entity tries to love another individual living entity. It's also an artificial situation. Neither one of them are the lover. They're only meant to be loved by Krishna. Now, if one loves Krishna, then automatically he gets and gives love to all living entities. He gets love from all living entities and he gives it. So that's the proper way. And the example is given again of the water and the root. If the water is given to the root, then automatically we give our love to the branches, to the leaves, to the fruits, to the flowers. We don't have to separately try. And if we do separately try, it doesn't work. What will you do? You kiss the flower. I love you. What good does that do for the flower? It dies right in your embrace. You have to, if you really love the flower, give water to the root. So if you really love your mother or your wife or your children, then give them Krishna. Serve Krishna. And don't think that by serving Krishna, you will be neglecting the service to your family or friends. That is the misunderstanding. That's the point of this, of Bhagavad Gita. That by serving Krishna, you're not neglecting other duties. You are fulfilling those duties. You're the only one that's fulfilling them. Everyone else is neglecting their duties. They're in illusion. They're thinking, I'm such a good gardener. Just see how I'm putting water on every inch of the branch. Here I'm putting water here, and every few minutes I'm sprinkling water on the branch. But the tree is dying. You're not a good gardener. You're a fool. So you're trying to serve your countrymen by giving them, you know, gross national product and taxes, and you're fighting for them. You're trying to serve them, but you're not actually serving them. But if you serve Krishna, then everyone is benefited by that service to Krishna.
The text 32, Krishna says that, O Partha,
which text?
32. O Partha, happy are the Kshatriyas to whom such fighting opportunities come unsought, opening for them the doors of the heavenly planets. So, in the present situation, can we say the same thing about the soldiers fighting for their country, like the war going on in the Iraq? So are they considered to be Kshatriyas, and does this apply to them also?
Let's look at the background here. Text 31. Considering your specific duty as a Kshatriya, you should know that there is no better engagement for you than fighting on religious principles. And so there is no need of hesitation. So fighting on religious principles. That is the basis of Krishna's statement. That because you are Arjuna, are fighting on religious principles. The others are not fighting on religious principles. Some of them might have been. Some of them, like Drona and Bhishma, even though they weren't fighting on the highest platform of pure devotion, in one sense. But in another sense, they were fighting on religious principles as proper Kshatriyas. Not out of greed, not out of envy, but according to... So for them, they're also acting properly. So they're also benefited. That was an argument that Krishna used, that your grandfathers and teachers, they're all great souls, Mahanubhava, they're a great personality, so they won't be in an unfortunate position. They'll be glorified. They'll go to the higher planets. But if the ordinary fighting that's going on today, it's not on the basis of religious principles. Therefore, one becomes implicated. Yes, it's a very awkward situation. Just like if you work for a big company, let's say you work for a grocery company. Well, somebody, they're purchasing so many meats and things. So you're implicated in some ways by that. Even if you're not, you yourself may be a vegetarian, you don't want to do that, but there's some implication, there's some impurity. Now sometimes one is forced to behave in a way that he's not pleased. And Prabhupada gives that example. So in that case, one may have to act and just try to offer everything to Krishna. It's like if one, someone is, there's an example in the Bhagavatam, there was a Brahmana, so some king wanted him to perform a yajna for a purpose of gaining a son that would kill this other person, and it wasn't a very nice thing, but as a Brahmana, he became implicated in that. Now, a pure Vaishnava, he may be able to transcend even the duties of a Brahmana on certain occasions. So it depends what level one is on. If he's on the level of ordinary person under the Varnashram system, then he may have to perform his duty, even if it's... Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, every action is covered by some degree of fault. Better to perform your own duty anyway. There's going to be some fault. You cannot expect that everything will be perfect. It's like a doctor. Now, he goes in and starts treating the patient. It's not that he always does everything perfectly. He may actually cause harm to the patient. But he's trying to do his duty the best he can. So, ultimately, he should do his duty. He's trying his best to save the patient. But what if he makes a mistake? So there's some sin. But that sin is not as bad as giving up the duty. That's the point. So, there are two types of duties. Duty according to the body, the Varnashram duty, and then there's spiritual duty to Krishna. So, if the duty to Krishna, if that is different than the bodily duty, then one has to transcend even the Varnashram duty. But in this case, they're the same. Krishna is telling him to do the same thing as his Varnashram duty. Thank you very much. Shrimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Shri Gaur Nitai ki jai.